A minute now before 10 o'clock. We're about an hour away from Between the Covers. Today, welcoming Melissa Yancey, author of the new collection of short fiction, Dog Years. And at 11:30, Radio Zine presents The Union Edge with a warning about unpaid internships and how Scandinavians got the economy right. But up next, it's On the Ground Radio and part four of Black Power at 50. That's coming right up here on The Boo. Hey, thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. A reminder that all new and increased gifts to KBOO are matched one-to-one through the end of the year. And thanks to the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems for that. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO is gearing up to celebrate 50 years of community radio, and we need your help. Take the Big Events Survey on kboo.fm and help us decide what kind of events you would attend or help build. Go to kboo.fm and click on the survey banner to help prepare for the Kaleidoscope of KBOO, Past, Present, and Future, 50th Anniversary Celebration.
Trade unionists. Well, I want you to know I'm a trade unionist. They came for socialists, and I want you to know I was a socialist. They came for Jews, and I was a Jew. And they're coming for Muslims, and we're all Muslims.
It's interesting. The road from the civil rights movement didn't lead to the election of Barack Obama. The road to Barack Obama came out of the Democratic Party and the left and a group of young people and young black people who wanted to see something new.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. Today, part four of our series, Black Power, 50 Years in D.C., 1966 to 2016, marking the half-century anniversary of the call for black power in this country in 1966. Today, a wide-ranging conversation with educator and activist Tom Porter about his view of black power in D.C., from Malcolm X to Barack Obama. Before we get to that interview, a few headlines from D.C. activism this week. Hundreds joined in a march and rally Wednesday against Islamophobia, especially that promoted by the incoming Trump administration. Chantel James has more.
On the winter solstice, the longest night of the year, protesters of all faiths gathered outside the headquarters of the Clarion Project, an organization that produces and promotes Islamophobic and anti-Muslim films, and has been named a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The protesters were organized under the banner of Jewish Voices for Peace, a group which has been behind several campaigns against Islamophobia. Speakers focused on the effort to have the Clarion Project evicted by Tishman Speyer, who owns the building. After chanting and holding up signs in front of 1717 Pennsylvania Avenue, the location of Clarion's headquarters, the protesters marched just 1.5 blocks to the White House, chanting such slogans as, "Don't give in to racist fear. Muslim friends are welcome here." At the White House, faith leaders from all traditions spoke against the Muslim registry and against the Islamophobia of incoming President Trump, urging interfaith solidarity at this time. Imam Jahari speaks to the crowd about coping during these times of Trump's election.
An unlikely suspect has brought us together. But now that we've been brought together, we're not going to be broken apart. Are you with me tonight?
Yeah.
If you all say yeah.
Yeah.
If you all say yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, you know there's a new industry going around. There are some people who are profiting off of our division. You know, we've been divided for too long. So we've allowed Islamophobia to creep in after anti-Semitism was already pushed out. We're not going back. Black Lives Matter got us to one place. Our resistance has gotten us only so far. Right now, you and I need to recommit ourselves to an ongoing act of public resistance against tyranny. I want to remind you, they came for the trade unionists. Well, I want you to know I'm a trade unionist. They came for socialists, and I want you to know I was a socialist. They came for Jews, and I was a Jew. And they're coming for Muslims, and we're all Muslim. They were coming for truth, and all of us were truth tellers.
From the White House, this is Chantal James signing off for On the Ground.
The Washington Peace Center, Code Pink, Women for Peace, and the National Lawyers Guild were among some of the other organizations participating in the action. A coalition, the People's Fairness Coalition, also held an overnight vigil on Tuesday in D.C. to honor people who are homeless and to remember homeless people who have died. They call for an end to life and death on the street. Participants joined in a candlelight procession to Freedom Plaza, where some slept overnight before attending a homeless memorial service on Wednesday morning. There will be a national watch night service here in D.C. presided over by the Reverend William Barber and Repairers of the Breach. That will be December 31st at 10 p.m. at Metropolitan AME Church, 1518 M Street in downtown D.C. In culture and media, new movies opening this weekend include Fences, the screen adaptation of the August Wilson play. In D.C., today is the final day that Busy Bee presents more than 60 pop-up shops at the Shiloh Family Life Center, 9th and P Streets in Northwest D.C. And a series of Kwanzaa programs are being presented around the city starting on Monday. You can access a complete list of programs on the Facebook page for D.C. Kwanzaa Planning Committee. The Economic Empowerment Organization Appeal is also sponsoring a Kwanzaa Black Business Support Initiative, encouraging patronizing of selected Black businesses during the holiday for a chance to win a prize. More information is at appealinc.org/events. And those are some of our headlines and happenings. When we come back, part four of our series, Black Power, 50 Years in D.C., 1966 to 2016, with Tom Porter. Stay with us.
Blue skies, happy days are here again, smiling at me. The skies above are clear again, nothing but blue skies. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Do I see happy days are here again? Bluebirds all together shouted now, singing a song. Let us tell the world about it now. Nothing but blue sky. There is no one who can doubt it now. From now, happy days.
That was Pettiford and Childs performing Blue Skies, and that was the theme music for Tom Porter during a morning show on WPFW Pacifica Radio in the 1990s. Cincinnati native Tom Porter was a member of CORE and SNCC and is a former director of the Antioch Graduate School of Education and executive director of the MLK Jr. Center for Social Change. He was dean of African American Studies at Ohio University, and also interim GM and program director at WPFW, where he hosted morning conversations. In this beginning of our talk, held at his home in Northwest D.C. yesterday, Porter discussed the early years of his involvement in the Black Power movement.
I was initially a member of CORE. In 1964, Roy Ennis and probably Floyd McKissick and some other people at the CORE convention in Kansas City, 1964, they purged all of the leftists out of CORE.
Really?
Yeah, Julius Hobson from D.C. You have to realize that the early people involved in the civil rights movement, the people who advised the younger people, whether it was Ella Baker, Jack O'Dell, most of these people were on the left. Some had even been members of the Communist Party. And so when they came into CORE and purged everybody, a lot of CORE chapters in the North said, well, we want to be bothered with this. So we became affiliates of SNCC. And that was the time that Stokely Carmichael was chair of SNCC and then Rap Brown. And so we became affiliated with SNCC, but really still the people who were in CORE and SNCC. That happened in a lot of places, including maybe in Baltimore as well. So I knew a lot of the SNCC people who had gone to Howard, Charlie Cobb, Stokely Carmichael. By then, Stokely was then somewhere else in terms of Africa. So when we came here, it was around 1970, and Antioch had a graduate school of education, and it was a teacher training program, offered a master's degree. And I came here to run that program. I'd been a student at Antioch. And so we knew all of these people, but they were, many of these people, and I don't want to name their names, but they became, in terms of the international struggle in Africa, they ended up supporting Jonas Savimbi and Holden Roberto, which was weird because the Cubans were in South Africa and Southern Africa fighting with the revolutionary forces, and these people were fighting them. Wow. So you had this whole kind of thing. But the struggle around the schools, which was a national struggle at that point, just wasn't in D.C. I mean, there was an organization headed by Preston Wilcox out of New York called the Association of African American Educators. Mm-hmm. And I actually belonged to it, and a lot of black people in education. And there was a fight around the community control, the control of the schools in Brooklyn, Ocean Hill, Brownsville. That was the struggle. There was a struggle in Boston, Roxbury, mm-hmm. and they took over school. And there were two schools here in D.C., Adams and Morgan School. And at the same time, D.C. was getting a got home rule. D.C. had just experienced a struggle in the streets. It's called the riots. And there was this organization headed by this guy called Catfish Mayfield, who Barry and his then-wife, Mary Treadwell, ended up taking over in some kind of way. And I used to be actually on 16th and, 16th and you, Big Billin' on the Corner. And Barry came here, got elected to the school board, then became head of the school board. And then I guess there was some kind of tacit agreement that Walter Washington should be the first mayor since he'd been the mayor before Home Rule, and so he was.
So what was happening at those two schools before?
Just regular schools.
Okay. And so why was there a need to take them over?
Well, it wasn't so much that Julius Hobson, who was from D.C., and he was on the, he headed the statehood party, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And that was his push, that the parents and the people in the community should control schools. And so Adams and Morgan schools were two of those schools that had a community board and what have you. And our role was to train the teachers at the master's degree level. Mm-hmm. You got to realize that the people who were training these teachers were Bob Rhodes, Jack O'Dell. I mean, these people, they were all socialists and some communists. A lot of our, but there are people who had deep roots in the movement going way back. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when you run into students who went to that center, you'll be amazed. I mean, they're like doctors and lawyers now, but, I mean, people swear by what they call the center. That's mm-hmm. what we call it. And so that created a problem because the ex-SNCC people, and I don't want to go too far with this, the ex-SNCC people, were many of them were fellows at the Institute for Policy Studies. Mark Raskin, who was head of the Institute for Policy Studies, who was also on the board of directors at Antioch College, wondering how these Negroes got up here who he didn't know. Because mm-hmm. we were all out of, like, Bob Rhodes was out of Ohio. Jack O'Dell was initially out of Detroit, but he was the man that J. Edgar Hoover called the most dangerous man in America, who was around Martin. And we had people like Julian Bond's father coming through as Horace Mann, coming through his lectures. We mean, it was serious, serious stuff. And so, and plus, we were given out master's degrees. So at one point, we were tremendously influenced in the D.C. school system. A lot of their students were students, and a lot of teachers were students in our program. Mm-hmm. Many of them went on to become assistant principals and principals in the D.C. school system. So that's where the struggle was in D.C. at that point. Now, we didn't come here to be involved in that struggle. We came here really to just simply run this graduate center and to really train people in what we thought people should know. So, but that's what was going on there in D.C. And, of course, Marion became the mayor. And everybody will tell you that Marion is the best mayor that D.C.'s had. That's true. But I think also they needed a mayor at that time who could control the streets. That was a big fear they had. And Barry had this reputation, even though he was from Mississippi, being a street dude. So, so he was a perfect fit. And he walked that line very, very good and did, you know, I mean, I don't take anything away from him. I think he, when you look at the mayors in D.C., he was the best out of a lot that they've had. So that's what the struggle was. Now,